Exactly 3 months have gone by since the catastrophic blowout at BP's Macondo well in the Gulf of Mexico. And despite enormous efforts, it was only last week that the oil company finally managed to place a temporary cap on the gushing well. Experts say the impact of the oil that has gushed out over the past 3 months is becoming more and more destructive in terms of human health, human livelihood, and environmental devastation. In particular, marine biologists warn that the oil spill's toll on seabirds is set to soar in the coming weeks as millions of waterfowl and other birds flock to the US coast, either to roost for the winter or to make stopovers there en route further south. The oil spill from the well has also caused an economic disaster in 5 states along the US's Gulf Coast, where many people make a living from the fishing, seafood, or tourism industries. In addition, doctors have warned that prolonged exposure to crude oil and the chemical dispersants which have been sprayed to break up the oil are a public health hazard to those in the vicinity. But what will be some of the most serious long-term effects of this environmental disaster, which is the worst in the history of the US? What were the worst mistakes made, and what are the lessons to be learnt in order to avoid such disasters in the future? More importantly, will those lessons be taken on board? Well, to find out the answers to those questions, I turned to Father Sean McDonough, Irish priest and a renowned environmentalist who has written more than half a dozen books on religion and ecology. He says just as in the Exxon Valdez spill in Alaska in 1989, the environmental and economic effects of this spill are huge and will be felt for many decades to come.
Well, if we compare it to what happened with Exxon Valdez when it spilled its cargo, they're still feeling the results of it, what, 10 to 15 years after it actually happened. Now, much more contaminant oil has actually come out in the Gulf. And as you know, it's not just the crude oil, but it's also, of course, the chemical dispersants that have been used by those who are trying to contain the oil spillage. So, in a sense, this is a public health hazard to many of the people living there. And, of course, it's disastrous for a number of species and for a number of habitats there. And it's a very clear challenge. Are we going to take these kinds of risks into the future? Because if we do it to get oil, we're going to have a huge backlash.
Now, you talked there, of course, about the effects on the bird life, the fishing. And in fact, experts say that the toll on seabirds is expected to rise dramatically this coming autumn when millions of waterfowl and other birds flock to the US Gulf Coast, either to roost there for the winter or to make stopovers en route further south. Do you share those fears?
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, many of these birds are on the red list, the endangered list, and particularly, for example, there are brown pelicans there that were down to extinction rates about 10 or 15 years ago. There has been a successful breeding program, and probably all that now is to no avail because they seemingly are almost certain to become extinct. And you can see some of the most graphic shots that have come out from the Gulf on our television has been one or other of these endangered species, particularly the brown pelicans. And the governor of the area, Bobby Jindal, he's confirmed that about 100 miles of the state's 450 coastline has been impacted by the oil. So that means that their habitats now will be contaminated into the indefinite future. And that's a great tragedy for the wildlife. There are other areas, for example, in the Gulf, there's a marine biologist, Jacqueline Savitz, who's been talking about the impact it will have on endangered sea turtles, and they're very endangered right around the world. So any drop in numbers will be huge for them. Another species that all of us love to eat, it's at critical rates before this happened, which is the bluefin tuna. They were down on 1960 terms, they're down by 90%. So again, if the breeding ground, which is in that area, if that is impacted, they could become extinct in the next 10 years.
And of course, when it comes to the impact on humans and how they earn their living, of course, there is going to be a long-term impact on the seafood and fishery industry all up and down that area.
Yes, and also a long-term effect on just human health. You know, it covers some areas, the neurological damage and cancer. I mean, much of, for example, the dispersants are being sprayed from the air. Well, they fall on the good and bad alike. And as someone who lived in an area in the Philippines in the 1980s, which was sprayed with organic chlorine on the pineapple field, I picked up a neurological problem called peripheral neuropathy. So all these issues are going to affect it. And particularly the doctors are saying the people who have most involved, particularly those who are going out into the to combat, they have experienced headaches, nausea, respiratory problems, dizziness, burning sensation in their throats, and with a problem of exposure to neurological damage and even cancer. So that's going to be huge also, not to mention what you have said in terms of the livelihood of a lot of people living in those Gulf states in Mississippi, Alabama, is actually from the sea on two levels, the seafood industry, particularly shrimp boats, and also recreation. So their lives will be impacted hugely by this gusher coming from an uncappable oil well that British Petroleum were involved in.
Do you think this whole environmental disaster, this, as you say, this blown out oil well, throws up important questions about the limits of technology? We've seen with BP how, for all the technology they have at their disposal, for all their ability to be able to drill miles beneath the seabed, they've really struggled to contain and cap this oil link. I mean, there's still concerns about seepage as we speak right now.
Exactly. And I think one of the most poignant shots on that was maybe in the middle to late May, when we saw a photograph of President Obama, Barack Obama, who most people would consider the most powerful man in the world. And he's looking out and he feels he can do nothing about this. So it's a failure, I think, on a number of grounds. First of all, it's obviously clear, although there are various investigations going on at the moment, but it seems to me to be clear that there were failure on many grounds. For example, a lot of documentation had come out in the previous number of years that those caps that they had on pipes weren't viable, and the companies just ignored that. This is from the companies themselves. Then when you go across to the regulatory agencies, you know, which should have been actually examining what the companies were doing, we find collusion. And that's one of the problems that we have across the board ecologically, is a lot of people who are in the, for example, the agribusiness or this particular mining business, they end up on the regulatory agencies after a while. So you had that particular problem. And also the pressure. Because even as we speak, there is still pressure from the oil people to get back out drilling in the Gulf. There's 5,000 people out of work, and so the out of work lobby and the out of people who are not working are saying, we have to get this going again. Now, I think the deep water disaster at the Macondo well should be a wake-up call. Is this the way we're going to guarantee access to petrochemicals in the future for the next 20 years and the damage that can be done? So I think that's a conversation that needs to happen in many parts of the world. We see it needs to happen in Canada with tar oil. Are we going to go after these? There's minimal gain in terms of energy, because it takes you so much energy to get the oil, but you leave a toxic residue behind you for all times, as far as humans are concerned.
So, given this, what changes would you like to see in the future in terms of regulatory procedures, you know, code of practice, contingency plans for handling such disasters in the future? What needs to be done to make it much safer?
Well, in actual fact, if they implemented the recommendations of two reports that were done 3 years ago, they would have had a backup stopper. Now, again, I don't want to, in a sense, speak before some of the investigations, but the commonly felt belief at the moment is that BP were behind schedule in terms of time, and also they were over budget, and they actually took shortcuts. So at least a double capping system, because if one fails, as it did in the case of the Macondo well, then another one can be put into practice. But I do think that there is real serious concern at the regulatory level also. Should we be coming up with depths that are beyond human technology at the moment? And you see, one of the difficulties is that if, as we expect, the oil prices go higher and higher, well, then that gives the motivation to companies like BP and others to actually begin to prospect in areas where they shouldn't. Now, one thing I'd like to say here, and I think it is that, you know, the US government got $20 billion from BP to look after this. The reality is something similar has been happening for the last 10 years in Nigeria. But there's very little focus from the world media about the contamination of the rivers in the estuary of Lagos and western Nigeria. And it's not just when it happens in places like the United States, but when oil companies take shortcuts everywhere, they should be penalized, and penalized very severely. And that again comes up for a real concern that there be global, global norms and global policies on this, because as we know, if one country puts them in place, then they go after other parts of the world where there are regimes that they can manipulate very much easier, and that's where they do their business.
So how hopeful are you that the lessons will be learned, as you say, not just by the oil companies, by the government and the ordinary individuals? Is there a risk that you think that after the memories of this fade, you know, it'll be back to business as normal? How hopeful are you?
Not that very hopeful, actually, because you can see what happened if you compare it to the financial collapse in 2008. Everybody was saying, well, the cause of this was very poor regulation. And 2 years down the road, we've got some our toe in the water, in a sense, on regulation. But now that the economies are kind of settling back again into potential levels of growth, people are saying, oh, we can't do anything to destabilize them at the moment. These are the kind of arguments that are also being used very sophisticatedly by the oil, by the petrochemical industry. And as we know, they are very powerful. They're huge monies. You see, in this case, what the U.S. media and the U.S. politicians have done, they have actually targeted one group, and that, of course, is BP. And in a sense, it's a classic scapegoat. So instead of saying, what does this mean for our use of petrochemicals, and particularly the way we've used gasoline in our industry, in our cars, for our heating, for cooling systems, they're not asking the basic question is, you know, do we need this? In a sense, does it have a future? How can we get onto alternative sources of energy? Even, you know, traditional, the last president, President Bush, talked about addiction to oil. Now, but there's no, for me, there are no coherent policies moving the world away from that addiction. And unless there are, we're going to get more and more spills like this, because they're going to go into deeper and deeper and more problematic waters.
I was speaking to Father Sean McDonough, author of several books on religion and ecology.